Hey everyone, Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton here with our weekly update on social media. So much going on here in Washington, D.C., as a good part of our country suffers the after effects of a major hurricane and seeming incompetence and politicization from the Biden-Harris administration. I'll give you the latest there. A new scandal involving Harris, specifically her husband. The Secret Service is completely out of control. The details are going to shock you. Plus Trump is going up to Butler or down. Yeah, up to Butler this weekend. So I'll give you some briefings there. And I've got so much to talk about. I've actually have a list here. Jack Smith, of course, is still abusing President Trump. I'll provide you some key information there. We had a major court hearing before the Minnesota Supreme Court on woke racism, new lawsuits on the abortion pill insanity being pushed by the death cult. Also, new documents about a health emergency about President Biden that evidently no one knew about but for this material, recordings that Judicial Watch has gotten. And plus, what is Biden up to? Is he actually running the White House? Should the 25th Amendment be invoked? We have a lawsuit on that topic as well. So first up is the Hurricane Helene that has decimated the southeastern United States. Hundreds killed. The bodies are still being recovered. North Carolina particularly devastated. And the concern is that FEMA and the Biden administration has been slow to act, and I've highlighted mainly because there's no one running the Biden administration. Joe Biden is cognitively disabled. He was up at the beach on holiday, as he is all the time, it seemingly these days, as this natural disaster and catastrophe occurred in multiple states. And, of course, the agency that's supposed to be taking care of emergencies like this and providing necessary support is FEMA. And a lot of folks believe that FEMA is a disaster itself, let alone an agency that can help address disasters. And FEMA is, their headquarters is near Judicial Watch's headquarters here in Washington, D.C. And I went down to explain to the public what we're up to in that regard.
Hey everyone, Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton here in front of the FEMA headquarters in Washington, D.C. I know a lot of Americans are concerned about the failures, evidently, of the Biden-Harris FEMA operation to respond appropriately to the hurricane. Folks are questioning whether monies that could be available for Americans are being spent on the Biden border invasion, or whether monies are being restricted and FEMA is interfering in relief efforts for the victims of the hurricane. Are politics and competence getting in the way of protecting Americans? Well, your Judicial Watch is on it. We've got several FOIA investigations going already, and you can be sure we aim to get to the truth about Biden-Harris FEMA scandals.
Well, as you know, Judicial Watch is America's leader in the Freedom of Information Act, and we've already submitted FOIAs. Elon Musk, for example, has been highlighting interference, alleged, by Biden agency officials in the distribution of aid by him and other heroic private actors trying to rescue and support Americans down there. There's a tweet he just issued shortly before I began this recording. So he just received something from one of his colleagues talking about FEMA. They're now about to shut down the airspace to regulate the private choppers we are riding. Please go down. Deliver Starlink and supplies. We are pushing back with Trump team as well to help us, but not looking good. We need help to get word out about FEMA. We spoke with Ivanka and handed out Starlinks with her yesterday, but FEMA then showed up and started blocking us. the largest concern for us here is the FAA throttling flights for our choppers while where they are requiring to-from information and mission now to deliver a discrete code. Doing this take a long time and very cumbersome in the ops. And then go down a little bit. So Pete Buttigieg, the hapless Secretary of Transportation, who spent his time over the weekend reportedly helping Tim Walz prepare for the vice presidential debate, responded with the usual claptrap from government officials. No one is shutting down the airspace, and FAA doesn't block legitimate rescue and recovery efforts. What does that mean, legitimate rescue and recovery flights? If you're encountering a problem, please give me a call. And then Elon responds, there are hundreds of reports of FEMA, FAA, report blocking flights. This literally just happened. I will follow you. Please DM me the number to call. And this is classic. 35 minutes later or so, or an hour later, still waiting. The helicopter is trying to land to deliver critical supplies. What's the number to call? So this is your government at work. And Judicial Watch has already submitted a FOIA request on this Elon Musk report and other reports that FEMA is interfering with rescue efforts. And the other concerns, as I noted in the report earlier, is that FEMA has spent a ton of money taking care of illegal aliens and supposedly just has barely enough money to deal with hurricane recovery efforts. Now, I know Republicans are upset about that, but I hate to kind of throw a wet blanket on their argument or burst their bubble. They've been funding this crap. I mean, to complain about FEMA spending money on illegal aliens when you're writing the darn check is, to me, are we supposed to check our brains at the door when these politicians make these arguments? I don't understand it. And as I warned earlier this month, they were planning. They came back from a six-week vacation, August break on September 8th, spent 2 weeks arguing about this continuing resolution, which is a blank check to everything they say they oppose, including monies like they're talking about now being spent on aliens. And I was talking to folks on the Hill, and it was clear they were just trying to get out and don't want to do anything till the end of the year. Here's what I reported.
Well, I've had a few meetings here in Washington, D.C. this week. It's pretty clear that most of Congress is thinking of ways to get out of the city without doing anything for the rest of the year. Not cutting spending to curtail inflation, not protecting our elections from alien voting, not protecting Trump and the rule of law from the effort to jail him by the Biden regime, not doing much of anything. And frankly, if you're interested in having Congress do something, you should contact them now. 202-225-3121. That's 202-225-3121.
I don't know if you can see me. I've got the video in front of me. There we are. So, sure enough, that's exactly what they did. They fled town. They voted for the CR to fully fund everything they say they hate. They didn't even pass the one thing they were fighting about, which was the effort to better ensure that illegal aliens or aliens generally can't vote in our federal elections. And now they're gone. They're gone until November 12th. And no one's expected to do anything much until at least the end of the year is when the CR runs out. So for all the complaints you hear about FEMA and the way they're spending money, that's the Republican-controlled House's fault, in part. And they have the pole position in terms of being able to leverage, if they wanted to, government shutdowns or the threats of shutdowns or continued government funding to ensure that money isn't wasted on supporting illegal alien invaders and that the focus is on when emergencies come, if the federal government's supposed to provide support, if they have adequate support to do what Americans want them to do. And that clearly isn't happening right now in the South. Now, why is that not happening? Well, I think in my based on my experience is that the government basically has all the money they ever need to do whatever they want at the time they're doing it. I know there are some technical aspects of that that, you know, make that more difficult in practice to pursue, but if they want to spend the money, it's there. And I don't think they want to spend the money down that way because there's a bunch of Trump voters there. They're not Democrat enclaves. And you may say, well, that's outrageous, Tom. Why would anyone think that way? But that's the way these bureaucracies think. I mean, politicians take care of their friends first. Western North Carolina is Trump country. And, you know, Trump made a show of going to help people before, you know, Kamala got back from her fundraising on the West Coast and Joe got back from his sunbathing up in Delaware or whatever the heck he was doing up there, convalescing really in many ways. And so that's why, in my view, you've got this issue of competence and politics, and it's an ugly mix when it comes to FEMA deploying assets and resources. And I have no doubt they are curtailing private relief efforts because the private relief efforts make the Biden-Harris regime look bad. And if Americans are harmed in the process, too bad. And that's why Judicial Watch has the Freedom of Information Act request already out. We've done a FOIA request on Elon Musk's tweet. And so we don't make requests in an idle fashion. We expect answers. We pursue them even if we don't sue, we pursue them. And obviously we have a powerful record of suing to get the truth out about what is an ongoing tragedy involving countless American citizens. So if you've got information about this FEMA scandal and you work in the government or you're affected, you're seeing what's happening down in North Carolina or Georgia or South Carolina or Tennessee, wherever, let us know. Maybe there's FOIAs we can pursue. But priorities, right? And the priority of the Biden administration is destroying its enemies. And we see that this week with the release of what I believe to be nothing more than a campaign document disguised as a legal brief smearing Donald Trump about January 6th and the election dispute. I don't know if we have the tweet, but I carefully reviewed the document. Here's the document. It's 100 and how many pages is it? Here it is, 165 pages of gossip, innuendo, the quote Shakespeare. What is it, a bunch of noise? Is it? I don't think he used the word bunch.
They're outrageous.
A whole lot of noise signifying nothing. So I shouldn't say to quote Shakespeare. I should say to mangle Shakespeare. Much noise signifying nothing from the Biden, Harris, Garland, Jack Smith Justice Department released by anti-Trump Judge Chutkan. This document shows that Donald Trump, it depicts no crimes by Donald Trump. It depicts no misconduct by Donald Trump. And it shows utter contempt. Its very existence is a slap in the face of the rule of law, the U.S. Constitution, and the Supreme Court. Because as you may recall, the Supreme Court ruled that President Trump has immunity for acts while in office. This brief simply ignores that ruling, ignores it. And what they do is they simply allege, obviously, public acts or acts as president are private, as if that makes any sense. So the whole process is built on a house of illegitimate sand, right? Because under the Supreme Court's ruling, they weren't allowed to gather information, one would argue, or one might argue, about the president's official acts the way they did here. Instead, they used improper evidence gathering, you know, improper inquiries into his official activities to try to concoct a crime that could throw him in jail. And when is this released? A month before the election. Talk about abuse of power. Talk about a banana republic. Talk about election interference and election rigging. As I said and noted before, this election's already been compromised by the election interference of anti-Trump prosecutors in Fulton County up in New York, anti-Trump judges, Judge Chutkan, the New York judges, and most directly, the Biden Justice Department, Jack Smith Garland, the Harris appointees over there, who are desperate to try to smear Trump in order to save the Harris campaign. And the irony is, who knows, maybe Harris could win. But they can't help but try to rig it. And so the election now, again, it's further compromised thanks to this document. And, you know, I've seen this misconduct up close from Jack Smith, the FBI, the Biden-Harris-Garland Justice Department, because I've been victimized by it. Your Judicial Watch has been victimized by it. As I note, the FBI came to my home with a subpoena, and then Jack Smith's team spent 4 hours harassing me before a grand jury. In retaliation for daring to raise questions about the rigged and ruined 2020 election and for opposing Biden's government corruption, his lawfare. I talked about it during a speech at CPAC earlier this year. Let's run that clip.
Well, you know, I don't need to tell you, we're in banana republic territory now. The Biden administration, with its unprecedented and political prosecutions of Trump, is now officially a regime. You know, I've seen it up close. Not too long ago, I had a significant skin cancer surgery. And a few hours after I got home, I'm on the couch recovering, feeling sorry for myself, when the FBI comes knocking. They came knocking on my door with a grand jury subpoena from the Biden DOJ. The agents tried to be pleasant and helpfully pointed out that something had come for me from Amazon. I suspect I am the first person in American history to receive FBI notice of an Amazon package delivery. I ended up being hassled and abused by the special counsel team for 4 hours over Trump documents, my First Amendment rights, and what I had for lunch with President Trump. It was a partisan fishing expedition. Frankly, it was like having to spend a day on an MSNBC panel. But I knew why they brought me before that grand jury. It was payback and intimidation for daring to defend Trump against their abuse of power.
And we're not going to be intimidated. I mean, we already have a lawsuit we've been pursuing to get the names of Jack Smith's top deputies. They're hiding them in an unprecedented fashion from the American people. The government employees who are trying to jail a former president, we're not asking for their secretaries' names. We want the top people's names to find out and be reassured or expose about the details of any political bias, or just to know who they are, because they work for us and we have a right to know. I mean, this is, when I say regime, I really mean it. This is banana republic, third world style Justice Department activity. And we saw it with this political game played by the courts in league with the Biden-Harris people to try to interfere in our election with these smears of Trump. So we've got the litigation about what Jack Smith is up to. We've got the litigation about the abuses of Trump. I mean, the reason I was hauled before a grand jury wasn't because I had, quote, any information as a witness. It's because we were bugging the Justice Department with lawsuits, because we were criticizing them publicly. Because we are a leader for government accountability, and they don't want government accountability. They want to be able to be, to abuse with impunity, and we're not going to let that happen. So I know what Jack Smith is about. I've seen it firsthand. Let me go back to my list. I don't want to forget what outrages I'm supposed to be talking. Oh. So we've been lectured the last few weeks about how masculinity is going to be, is being redefined by the partisan left. I mean, look at this. I had a reaction to this video of, was it the CNN anchors talking about too much testosterone? Look at this.
Something that has also been an important part or an interesting part of how people have talked about your role here is how your role has reshaped the perception of masculinity. And I'm not sure you planned on that, but you are an incredibly supportive spouse. Has that been an evolution for you? And do you think that's part of the role you might play as first gentleman?
It's funny. I've started to think a lot about this. I've always been like this. My dad was like this. And to me, it's the right thing.
Yeah, that was MSNBC, and there was this other video of CNN talking about how wonderful the new definition of masculinity was over at the convention. So, do we have it yet? Okay, well, forget about it. So, Mr. Emhoff is the epitome of the new masculinity. I guess, you know, when you hear the left media complain about too much testosterone and redefining masculinity, what they're saying is they don't like the idea of men generally. I mean, it's completely anti-male. It's misandry, right? Misandry, I think, is the pronunciation. And the irony is that the new masculinity evidently entails hitting women. We have this quite credible report in the Daily Mail that Mr. Emhoff, Vice President Harris's husband, was involved in domestic violence. Here's the clip I had reacting initially to it.
Well, I guess, once again, I don't fit into the new definition of masculinity being put out there by the left using Doug Emhoff as a model. Vice President Harris's husband, Emhoff, has been credibly accused with assaulting his then-girlfriend for flirting with another man. Man, I wonder if they're going to use the same standards they harassed Trump with to target Doug Emhoff. But you know how that goes with the left. Outrageous.
So, you know, you'll see, and we'll show you the Daily Mail story that is shocking America. It leads, the second gentleman, Doug Emhoff, a 59, allegedly struck a woman in the face so hard she spun around while waiting in a valet line. at night after a May 2012 Cannes Film Festival event in France. She told three friends contemporaneously at the time. One of Jane's friends, who's the Jane meaning Jane Doe, her name is not being disclosed. A top New York businessman, one of the friends, I think the woman who was hit was a lawyer, allegedly, said she was at home getting ready for bed that night when she got an unexpected call from her. It was hard to hear her because she was sobbing. She told me she was with a guy and he hit her. It was very clear she was telling me what she was telling me. She said she was with a guy, her date. She was at the Cannes Film Festival and he hit her. She was in the car with the guy at the time. I don't know what to, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know whether to call the French police. I couldn't get a hold of her after calling her back. He said he still has a vivid memory of the troubling conversation from 12 years ago. So where's the media been on this? Well, it's virtually silence. It's virtually silent. As I noted with Donald Trump, it would have been headlines. He quite possibly could be the first gentleman of the United States if Kamala Harris wins. He could be subject to civil liability. Remember up in New York, they changed the law specifically to allow Trump to be sued outside the typical statute of limitations over the allegations he faced from, what was her name? Carol was her last name? Jean Carroll? E. Jean Carroll? What's going to happen with Emhoff? But it highlights the double standards. I don't know if he actually did this or not. I mean, it's credible enough. It's a credible enough report. And he issued a non-denial denial. As I noted on my Twitter feed, I don't remember what the specific language was. I don't know. Can anyone call it up? He talked to Semaphore, made a statement. I think he said that... Do we have it? Okay. So I raise this not because it's the number one issue in America, but the question is, what are the standards that the media has, that our law enforcement community has when it comes to assault and battery? And here we have, remember, Joe Biden was credibly accused. Media didn't care. Doug Emhoff, credibly accused. Media doesn't care. And, of course, Trump, he'll probably be impeached three more times about things like this if the left gets their way. So just, you know, another example not only of potential government corruption, but what did Kamala Harris know about this? But media corruption as well. So, this country faces so many crises. You know, there's a war in the Middle East. Iran attacking Israel. Israel trying to defend itself. Violence, I think, that is erupting because of the weakness of President Biden, and I'll get into that later. And of course, the other crisis, speaking of Iran, is the threat, the ongoing risk of death for President Trump, not only because of threats from Iran, but the failures and incompetence in politics of the Secret Service. And, you know, one of the most outrageous things about what happened to Trump, and there are many, it's bad enough what the Secret Service did or did not do in terms of his protection. But the subsequent cover-up continues to be astonishing, even to me. And I'm used to seeing a lot of cover-ups as head of Judicial Watch. And I was just on talking a few weeks ago about the FBI covering up virtually everything about the first Trump assassination attempt. Let's go to that tape.
Everyone, breaking news. The FBI is withholding records about the Trump assassination issue from Judicial Watch. They're citing law enforcement proceedings and interference with such to hide any records they have about coordination with the Secret Service before Trump's speaking event up in Butler, Pennsylvania, that resulted in his near death from an assassination attempt. This is on top of the Secret Service withholding records from Judicial Watch as well. Now, Judicial Watch is initiating proceedings that will likely result in lawsuits, but there is a coordinated, it looks like, and comprehensive cover-up on the Trump assassination attempt from the Biden administration.
And that cover-up continues. We have at least one federal lawsuit. There's been against the Secret Service about their failures to protect Trump and or to provide the necessary security for Trump. And as best as I can tell, the FBI and the Secret Service have yet to release any documents under FOIA. The good news is, for transparency, is that Judicial Watch has kind of threaded another way to get some documents and information. And that's from local officials in Pennsylvania who are trying to comply, it looks like, with the Right to Know law in Pennsylvania. It's literally called the Right to Know law. And we received some documents that are going to be unpleasant. So if you don't like blood and guts, don't watch the next minute or two of this broadcast. But the Beaver, I think it was the, is it Beaver County or Town of Beaver?
Yep.
Which one? County or town? Huh?
Beaver County, Butler, Pennsylvania.
Beaver County and up near Butler. They had a sniper team that was providing support to the Secret Service and their local colleagues. And we were able to obtain, thanks to our persistence, some documents from them, specifically photographs, text messages. We have some video as well, and other operational details and reports, and we're still examining them. But here are some of the photographs we received that include, there you have the blacked out or whited out picture of the shooter dead there on the roof. Pictures that we've previously disclosed that Judicial Watch had exclusively obtained earlier. But I want you to look at this text message here. Kid learning. Can we go back to that text message?
Stand by, working on it.
Okay. Go to the next one. Kid learning around the building. I guess that's a typo. We are in. I did see him with a rangefinder looking towards stage. FYI, if you want to notify Secret Service snipers, look out. I lost sight of him. Also a bike with a backpack sitting next to it in the rear of the building that was not seen earlier. Then someone says, call in command and have uniform check it out. So you kind of see that they began to notice, and the shooting was some time after that. So kind of a dramatic illustration that they knew. So let's look at some of these other photos here. Run the photos then again. Go to the next slide. There's the backpack with the bike. There's the phone that was found next to the body. Those pictures of the... There he is, close enough to see his phone. We had released that photo before. There's blood going, streaming down from the body there. There he is. Hands tied behind his back. Wasn't there another one of the shoot of a close-up of his head? That's really graphic, but it's something I think people should see. So all of this is released not because of the federal government, not because of Congress, but because of Judicial Watch. And without Judicial Watch's insistence and persistence in getting documents such as these, you just won't have this basic information. We have video of the police briefing the Secret Service about what they found. I think the video had been publicized before. So we're going to have more detail later, maybe next week, on what we uncovered from local law enforcement in Pennsylvania. You know, but in the meantime, President Trump is going to be up in Butler again, which is good to see. And Elon Musk said he was going up there, and I made the comment that there should be Democrats and Republicans up there with him. I know it's a political event, but I'm sure there's a way you can work it out. I mean, you can show up and say I'm here because I'm happy Trump is alive, and I want to honor the man who was killed and the people who were injured, and let's celebrate. You know, we all got through this. But, you know, in the meantime, I guess that's kind of a naive wish of mine, right? Because the left has decided to continue to eviscerate Trump, incite violence against him. As I noted, after the second assassination attempt, the left's response was, I just dropped one of the releases here. One second. The less responses were to say that he deserved it. His rhetoric caused the shooting. I mean, you've had a politician recently talk about him being one of Biden's cabinet officials, talking about how Trump needs to be extinguished. There was an MSNBC host just the other day talking about how he should get a knuckle sandwich of some type. This incitement is clear, and I fear for the president's safety. And Judicial Watch is not I've said it once and I'll say it again. Judicial Watch is not going to move on. The Secret Service is a mess. The New York Times had a big piece this week. A dishonest piece because it kind of avoided a lot of the political issues that would hurt Trump, Biden, and Harris. But the piece suggested that, you know, the Secret Service was hemorrhaging staff because it was a miserable place to work. Corrupt, full of favoritism. They ignored the DEI garbage that Judicial Watch has exposed. The efforts to place, you know, the reality that they were placing agents at risk to cover up abuse by Biden with his dogs biting them. Imagine working for Biden and him allowing his dog biting you and 24 of your colleagues and nothing being done by your leadership. Would you want to be in that agency? Of course not. And, of course, they've been denying Secret Service protection, adequate protection to President Trump. They've been lying about it. They tried to lie about it. They still are denying him adequate protection. And so Judicial Watch has at least 24 FOIA requests. We have one lawsuit, more likely coming. And in terms of public education, we're just going to keep on punching. About the corruption at the Secret Service. Because there are agents there who are putting their lives on the line and who are being put needlessly at risk by the leadership because of their failures. I mean, so when Trump is almost killed, that means the agents around him are almost killed. When the perimeter is insecure at the golf course and there's a guy with a gun aiming at Trump, all those agents and law enforcement around are put at risk. This is a much bigger issue than just protection of Trump. It's protection of the agents as well. And that's why we've been adamant in demanding accountability. Now, before I move on, we got some big news coming. The new book is coming out. My new book for Judicial Watch, Rights and Freedoms in Peril, an investigative report on the left's attack on America. Scan the code go to Judicial Watch or go to judicialwatchbook.com or just go to Amazon, look up Tom Fitton, where you'll see all of our books, including the most recent one that comes out on, when does it come out on? October 15th. But you order it now, you'll have it, you know, if you read stuff online, it will be in your inbox or on your Kindle the day it gets published, and probably mailed to you probably even a few days earlier, the way the industry works now. So the book is great. It is the book America needs. And it's funny, I was doing an interview about it this morning on what's the Philadelphia channel? Is it radio? Dom Giordano. WPHT? Is that the Philly show? Well, anyway, we'll post it up eventually on our YouTube. And I was laughing with the host. I said, you know, I'm going back through the book, obviously, prepping for the interview, and I'm getting angry again. I thought I'd break the book in half. Or tear it in half, right? Chaos, this is the chapters. Chaos at the border. Lawfare targeting Trump. Diversity scams and party spoils. The COVID cover-up. An election like any other. The big lie. Just crazy, crazy material in here about government corruption. And more importantly, the threats to your freedom, your rights, your republic, your country, your constitution. Rights and freedoms in peril. Purchase it now. Great way to support Judicial Watch. And this is the sort of things that you get as a result of supporting Judicial Watch. You get an organization that's able to extract from the government information that otherwise you'd never see. Important information. For example, we just received from the Las Vegas Police Department radio recordings that show the reaction by the local police to what looks to be a Joe Biden hospital medical emergency. We received the records in response to a Nevada Public Records Act request to the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department that show it shutting down roads and clearing a path to a local hospital on July 17th, 2024, for a, quote, sick or injured President Biden. Did you hear anything about that? I didn't. Now, I knew he had COVID around that time, but I didn't know it was this emergency, at least as the police were recounting it, in the transmission recordings we uncovered. President Biden suddenly canceled an appearance at an event in Las Vegas after testing positive for COVID-19. He was set to speak at the Unidos U.S. annual conference. And 4 days later, he quit. Or actually, no, he was pushed out as a result of the coup. We basically asked for all records regarding Biden having any form of medical emergency event situation or requests or expedite his movement while in Las Vegas for that event. And the Las Vegas police produced three recordings. One, two, three. I pointed two, but I meant three. It's 43 minutes of transmission. We're not going to play all 43 minutes. So we do have excerpts from the audio, which show that clearly there was something going on with Joe Biden at the hospital. Let's play some of those transmissions.
All right. So right now they're on a hold for something with the president. So if you can go ahead and let some of that north and south flow, but not east and west, just north and south, please.
We're on the radio. Right now, POTUS is 421. He's being seen, so we're kind of waiting to see how this is shaping out. So for everybody's knowledge, he's 421 right now. We're just trying to figure out what's going on, and we're going to go from there.
Can you have all the units that are assigned to the motorcade come down to Desert Inn and Eastern, DI and Eastern, and I need them here ASAP.
You say ASAP, do you want us code 3 there?
Yes, please. All units on this channel, 302. What we're going to do is the tail car is going to be in a black Explorer. They're going to get out in front. We're going to go south on Eastern, and they're going to deploy you. So the first car behind the EP Explorer
just listen to what they're telling you and deploy you. And then each car after that will be deployed. All right, everybody, keep in mind, for this one, we're trying to go for a full closure. We need a full closure, so it needs to be north and southbound on Eastern as well as east and west on Russell.
We are going to shut down everything.
302. Secret Service is requesting a code 3 response.
For all my units at the airport, be advised, the motorcade is at Air Force One, so just hold your road closure tight.
Okay, so something was happening. Code 3, they wanted, it was an emergency situation where President Biden was being seen. And I don't know about you, but I'm not aware of any detail about that other than he was had COVID. At one point, officers are heard over the radio rushing to secure the perimeter of University Medical Center Hospital and with a rendezvous outside the emergency room entrance in anticipation of Biden's arrival. A max TAC alert, meaning maximum tactical alert, is declared over the radio. I don't know, did we have anything from that on that those clips? We should pull those out, and we'll share them on YouTube and other social media. So it's clear in these audio recordings, and we have the transcripts of everything and the audio recordings themselves available on our internet site at judicialwatch.org, that there was a significant medical emergency concerning President Biden. And we don't know any other detail about it, and we didn't even know there was a significant medical emergency but for this Judicial Watch FOIA investigation. White House Press Secretary Jean-Pierre released a statement regarding what happened in Las Vegas. Earlier today, following his first event in Las Vegas, President Biden tested positive for COVID-19. He is vaccinated and boosted, and he is experiencing mild symptoms. He will be returning to Delaware, where he will self-isolate and will continue to carry out all of his duties fully during that time. And then he's shown, you know, there are video of him being shown slowly entering Air Force One. You know, he clearly wasn't well. But if he had emergency medical treatment at an emergency room, the American people should have been informed of that. But that was at a time that was very sensitive to them because it was shortly after the debate, right? I think I'm getting the timing right. These Las Vegas police recordings raise significant questions about the American people, about whether the American people were told the full truth about President Biden's health status. I'd say some pretty incredible stuff from Judicial Watch. President Biden had a medical emergency of some type in Las Vegas, and we wouldn't know about it other than Judicial Watch. And it's not enough to say, White House, oh, well, we told you he had COVID. Well, he got emergency treatment for COVID at an emergency room? That's mighty different than just having COVID. So some questions that need to be answered. Let's see if anyone's aware. Well, Congress isn't going to do anything. They're out till after the election. So I was in Minnesota this week. I didn't see Tim Walz. I was at the Capitol. I didn't see Tim Walz. I was there with my colleague, Michael Pekesha, who's a senior attorney here at Judicial Watch. Michael had an argument for our client, our taxpayer client, who is challenging a Minneapolis school district contract with the teachers union. And the case is now before the Minnesota Supreme Court. The contract allows for discrimination against white people in layoffs and hiring. It's outrageous. And there's taxpayer standing in Minnesota that allows taxpayers to challenge illegal expenditure of funds, generally speaking, such as a contract that requires discrimination. Among other things, the contract, this is from the lawsuit, the contract provides preferences, protections, and privileges for Minneapolis public school teachers of certain races and ethnicities under a section entitled Article 15, Protections for Educators of Color. There's no similar provision covering educators who are not of color. Under the contract, teachers of color are exempt from defendant MPSs, the Minneapolis Public Schools, seniority-based layoffs and reassignments, which means when layoffs or reassignments occur, the most senior teacher who is not of color will be laid off or reassigned. In addition, the contract mandates that the defendants, the school district, reinstate teachers of color over more senior teachers who are not of color. So they get you coming and going in terms of the racism there. It is outrageously unconstitutional, brazenly illegal, and they want to get away with it. And in court, they've been arguing that our taxpayer client doesn't have the right to challenge this outrageous abuse of tax dollars, running a racial spoil system in Minneapolis using your tax dollars. I mean, what's really outrageous is that Judicial Watch has to come in and do this to try to get it stopped. Where are the feds? Where's Tim Walz? So the lower court first threw it out, didn't want to deal with it. The appellate court said, of course, there's taxpayers standing for this. So the teachers' unions essentially are all aligned against us in Minnesota. So we're facing some powerful interests. The Minneapolis Public Schools appealed their loss and tried to get now the Supreme Court to shut it down of Minnesota. And so that court is, it has almost all appointees of Democratic governors. But that doesn't mean we're going to lose. Indeed, a Democrat appointee wrote the appellate decision that resurrected our case now that we're trying to defend before the Minnesota Supreme Court. So Michael and I went up to St. Paul, and our local counsel, Dan Rosen, was there with us. And the Supreme Court from Minnesota often has oral arguments in the state capitol there in St. Paul. They have their own courthouse, like the Supreme Court building, and there's an appellate courthouse next door to the capitol. But they also like to meet in the state capitol itself. Beautiful building, by the way. If you're ever in the area, it's probably worth a visit. And so the government's lawyer made an argument, and then Michael made an argument. So Michael Bekesha ably defended our client, taxpayer, who wants to challenge this illegal expenditure of funds. And here are some highlights from the oral argument before the Minnesota Supreme Court.
Here, what we're challenging is the negotiated term of the contract, which was a process by which Minneapolis Public Schools is making hiring, firing, employment decisions of their teachers based on race or ethnicity. And so the focus is, it could be the rejiggering of the computer systems. It could be the HR, the salary of the HR individual. It could be lists that are created. It's other steps that are needed so that Minneapolis Public Schools can classify their teachers by race and ethnicity. And in the end, you have an expenditure, which you have a teacher that, but for this discriminatory process, would not have a job. And so we are not saying that, having a teacher of a certain race is illegal or is the illegal expenditure. It's the nature of how we get there. It's very similar to the other cases that this court has heard over the years and to an extent reaffirmed or cited to in its most recent taxpayer case.
If I could just interject, of course it doesn't require unconstitutional action, but Section 122A.41, Subdivision 14A, requires the school board and the exclusive bargaining units to negotiate a plan for providing for unrequested leaves of absence. I mean, it seems like, isn't that the underlying legal requirement that the school district is trying to respond to and negotiating with the teachers on this question?
Yes, Your Honor. But if the school district entered into a policy, you know, part of the requirement is to pay teachers, to reach an agreement where teachers are paid. If the school district and the unions entered into an agreement that said all white teachers must work for free, all black teachers get paid X number of dollars, or we will only hire teachers of a certain race, or that we will only teach students of a certain color, or that we'll provide textbooks only to students of a certain color, that would be fulfilling their statutory obligation to meet and confer and negotiate bargain terms. That doesn't mean that what they can do is negotiate for terms that would violate the Minnesota Constitution. And so there are limitations. It is the policy limitations, but it is not the limitations that we're challenging here. We're challenging specifically the process by which teachers' employment decisions are being made by teachers. The expenditures that go towards those employment decisions are the expenditures we're challenging. Those are directly related to what we're challenging. And then in the end, what you have is you have the salaries for those teachers, but for this method, but for this process that is discriminatory, wouldn't be paid. And so these cases are very similar to the cases that we cite in our brief.
So you could see me sitting back there. It takes all of my energy not to say something during these arguments. But, of course, I've been doing this so long, I know just to sit and remain calm. But it's you can imagine hearing some of the justices' questions. And just because they ask questions I don't like, it doesn't mean they're going to rule against us. You know, they're just exploring the various permutations of the legal argument. But in the end, this isn't a disagreement about process that we're using taxpayer standing to try to change, that we, you know, essentially that, well, we don't like a law that was passed, and so we're just going to allege that it's illegal and say taxpayers can't spend money on it. That's kind of what the nub of the argument was. In this case, it's obviously illegal to engage in discrimination. So basically, running that whole program is prohibited using tax dollars, or, you know, you can't use tax dollars to do anything related to that program. And I would hope the court understands that. Otherwise, it's going to be the point of view in Minnesota that taxpayers can't challenge government programs that engage in racial discrimination, division, and segregation, or anything else that is typically prohibited under the 14th Amendment, the Minnesota State Constitution, federal and state civil rights laws. I hope that's not the case in Minnesota. But like I said, the teachers' unions are all opposed to us, very powerful public interests. Minneapolis, the biggest school district in the state, signed on to this. This was the centerpiece of a strike settlement, this provision. So if it were purely law, we know how it turned out. But we're not on that battlefield in some ways, aren't we? So you can watch the full argument at the YouTube site of Judicial Watch or on Rumble. I think it's on Rumble as well. And I encourage you to do so. But, you know, this kind of goes to a kind of a bigger issue. And I talked about Judicial Watch's book. You know, we are one of the country's civil rights leaders right now, because no one or few are defending the rule of law when it comes to equal protection of the law like Judicial Watch is. There are a few other groups. Ed Blum has been doing great work. FIRE is out there. And as I say, you know, a few others. But there are a few others. But the few, you know, we happy few, to quote Shakespeare again, are engaged in these battles because the left is targeting equal protection, targeting laws against race discrimination. They think they can discriminate in favor of their favored classes, people of color, or people who identify as people of color, which is kind of mind-blowing in and of itself, isn't it? And it's Judicial Watch in court, whether it be in Minnesota, whether it be in Evanston, Illinois, where they have a reparations program, whether it be in California, where they had quotas be successfully overturned, or Asheville, North Carolina, God bless our friends in Asheville, but we had litigation down there because the city government authorized race-based scholarships. And they settled our lawsuit by taking out the race-based requirements for the scholarship. The left is embracing racial division and discrimination that is unlawful, unconstitutional, and destructive to the American way. And Judicial Watch is front and center in fighting this in Minnesota, in Illinois, in California, in North Carolina, wherever, and however. So great piece of litigation, great work by Judicial Watch. Michael Bekesha, to go before a court where, you know, the justices weren't all that friendly. They were polite and professional, but obviously were pushing. He did an excellent job. And so kudos to Michael and kudos to the entire Judicial Watch legal team. It's a team effort here. And, you know, I get to come on and talk about all the great work our lawyers and investigators and other staff do. And we only do it with your support. And if you're not supporting Judicial Watch, I encourage you to do so. Because it has results. I mean, this heavy lifting gets results. And we're only able to do it with your generous donations. So what else we got going on? Speaking of crises here in Washington, D.C., we have the crisis of President, as I've noted earlier in the program, President Biden being completely out of it. He's cognitively disabled. It's the reason he is not running for president. According to a report, Obama and others threatened the 25th Amendment on him unless he pulled out of the campaign. Robert Hur, the special counsel, said, well, we can't prosecute him for committing crimes because a jury would think he's just a nice old man with memory problems. And if Garland agrees with that, then he should be calling for the 25th Amendment, right? The 25th Amendment is designed to protect the public and our system from a disabled president. Now, in theory, you know, they were worried mostly, my guess is, about a president who became disabled as a result of an attack or an injury or an accident, right? And they needed the vice president to come in and step up and be able to do and perform the president's duties as commander-in-chief and chief executive officer. But my guess is they were the more challenging difficulty would be if someone became disabled as a result of a cognitive deficit. And that, I think, is the issue with Joe Biden. I mean, I don't need to tell you. You've seen the debate. You've seen him just perform recently. He's out of it. And I'm not making fun of him. I'm concerned about him. And as importantly, I'm concerned about the United States of America and our national security. You want to know why there's a crisis in North Carolina and in the South because of the hurricane? Because Joe Biden's out of it. You want to know why there's a war in Iran and Israel and the Middle East is on fire? We invite aggression by our enemies when we are weak. And we are weak because Joe Biden is out of it. You know, and we're all supposed to pretend it's all been settled because he's not running for president. We still have a country to defend in the meantime. So as I've been saying repeatedly, I'm not moving on. Judicial Watch isn't moving on. And we are doing a comprehensive investigation into the 25th Amendment issue. And that has resulted in a federal Freedom of Information Act lawsuit against the Justice Department. We submitted a FOIA request in August for records and communications of senior Justice Department officials, including Garland. Regarding invoking the 25th Amendment against President Biden. As I noted earlier, on February 5th, 2024, Special Counsel Robert Hur issued the report of the Special Counsel on the investigation into unauthorized removal, retention, and disclosure of classified documents discovered at locations including the Penn Biden Center and Delaware private residence of President Joseph R. Biden Jr. I read all of that because I want you to remind you of the criminality Biden was caught in. In the report, Herr called Biden a well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory and declined to charge Biden with a serious felony. And this is the specifics. We have also considered that at trial, Biden would likely present himself to a jury, as he did during an interview with him, as a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory. Based on our direct interactions with and observations of him, he is someone for whom many jurors will want to identify reasonable doubt. It would be difficult to convince a jury that they should convict him by then, a former president well into his 80s, of a serious felony that requires a mental state of willfulness. Congressman Claudia Tenney of New York sent a letter to Merrick shortly thereafter. Special counsel's reasoning was alarming. He recited numerous instances in which Biden exhibited dramatically compromised mental faculties and concluded that a jury would likely to perceive Biden as a sympathetic and forgetful old man. It is incumbent upon you to explore the proceedings to remove the president pursuant to the 25th Amendment. Biden needs to be charged or he needs to be removed. There's no middle ground. Exactly. If Garland thinks that Joe Biden's okay, then he should charge him and reject Herr's conclusion. He has an obligation. If he agrees, he should be removed. If President Biden is as mentally sound as he and the people around him maintain, why did he decide not to seek re-election? If he's an elderly man with a poor memory, as Special Counsel Herr for A.G. Garland found, why has he not been removed under the 25th Amendment? And why is the Justice Department unlawfully hiding documents about this serious national security issue? Now, separately, Judicial Watch is asking for an audio of that interview with Biden that they're hiding. So that's been fully litigated, and we hope to get a decision from that court soon. But this 25th Amendment issue could save the country if it's implemented properly and in time. Now, I know people say, well, I don't want the new president or Vice President Harris to take on the duties and responsibilities of president. Well, too bad. I'm sorry. That's the way it's supposed to be. We can't have someone not be able to do the job cognitively. I mean, I may disagree with their policies, but that's what the Constitution requires. It's too risky. I'm dropping stuff here. I'm getting so agitated. Hold on a second. So we sued. We'll see what happens. But I think this should be an issue for every American and every politician here in town. If I were in Congress, I'd be having 25th Amendment hearings. I'd be calling in Kamala Harris. I'd be calling in cabinet officials, asking them about the 25th Amendment. I would be calling in President Biden. Now, he might not want to testify, but you can ask. But we've got to get serious about protecting our republic. I'm tired of politicians of both parties, those who want to destroy the republic, and those who don't care that others want to destroy the republic and don't want to do anything about it. And there's a core group who kind of are semi-concerned, but never really get their act together. I'm just tired of it. And that's why there's this level of urgency that I hope I'm communicating to you about the work Judicial Watch does, because we're going to try to do what we can within the law to protect the republic, expose what's happening, and allow voters to have an understanding and hopefully take actions within their purview as citizens in terms of pressure and education and also other things to protect our republic. So one of the evils of our age, America's a great country, but we're stained by abortion. Many states allow abortion, you know, even after Roe's been overturned. It's too easy to get an abortion for any reason anywhere in the country. There are some restrictions that the left complains about. But, for instance, last year we had over 1 million abortions. There's been a 10% increase in abortions under Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. So well over 1 million abortions. And one of the reasons abortions are increasing is because the left and the Biden administration are pushing this abortion pill, which has tremendous controversy. If you think the vaccines are risky, you should hear about RU486, Mifepristone. Mifeprex is the, I think, the trade name. And it was first approved by Hillary Clinton. I know it was the Clinton administration, but Hillary was behind the approval. So the FDA was corrupted there. So the company that had the pill didn't really want to get behind it because they had previously helped the Nazis kill Jews during the Holocaust. And they thought an abortion pill would be poor public relations. So they were cajoled and pressured by the Clinton gang at the time to allow a secretive nonprofit entity to take it over. I think I'm getting this story right. And then the FDA muscled it through. And then the Obama administration made it more widely available, kind of threw out the rules for public health to make it more widely available because abortion fanaticism is key to the left and the Democratic Party these days, unfortunately. And then the Biden administration, especially after Roe was overturned, doubled down in trying to get women to take the pill, the abortion, chemical abortion pill. There's this big story about this poor woman who died as a result of complications from the pill. And what is the left doing? They're blaming folks who restrict abortion as opposed to asking questions about how the heck did this abortion pill result in the death of a woman? I mean, when it comes to abortion, all science, public safety, health, all of that's thrown out the window. It's pure politics, folks. I mean, they want women to take this pill in their homes and expel dead babies in their bathrooms. I mean, that's, to be blunt, what we're talking about. And they're on their own with no sufficient medical attention and treatment. Now, they pretend they've got it all covered, but they don't. It's not done under proper medical care, as if, as I often say, abortion isn't health care, it's killing. But there isn't even they're not even pretending that doctors are going to be involved in any significant way or in the appropriate way in the handling of these chemical abortion pills. So Judicial Watch has actually been investigating these death pills forever, or kill pills, as I called them, since the Clinton administration. I mean, I hate this. How long ago is that now? It's like over 20 years. I remember getting all the documents about women killed as a result of taking the pill. Of course, the pill, when effective, kills other human beings too, unborn human beings. And there's still cover-ups about it. We've had litigation about it, significant litigation. There's been no one else who's done as much litigation on these pills as Judicial Watch. And so we filed another lawsuit just the other day in partnership with another group, Advancing American Freedom Foundation. And they're a group, they were founded initially by Mike Pence, who's very personally concerned about this issue, obviously. And his organization has been investigating this separately so that he's got another conservative public policy group going. And so what we asked for were documents about the approval back from the Clinton years. They're still hiding about how this pill came to come into the United States from abroad. We want documents from between the Clinton White House and the FDA, and how the bill and how the pill was approved. I mean, he went overseas, the head of the Clinton FDA, to meet with these companies to bring these kill pills into the United States through this radical FDA process. As we note in the release, in response to pressure from pro-abortion activists, the Clinton Food and Drug Administration accelerated approval of the abortion pill in September of 2000. Similarly, the Obama and Biden administrations took steps to make the controversial pill more widely available in a way that undermined its safe use. As Mark Wheat, who is the J. Mark Wheat, who's the general counsel for Advancing American Freedom, says, the FDA has repeatedly refused to acknowledge its role in approving the dangerous abortion drug, mifepristone, and has refused to disclose communications regarding its approval. Advancing American Freedom Foundation has worked tirelessly to disclose the truth behind the FDA's negligence and to bring justice for the women hurt or killed by this drug. The American people deserve to know the facts of how the FDA shirked protocols in order to expand abortions, even at the cost of the health of women using the drug. We're grateful to Judicial Watch for picking up AAF's case. Well, and we're happy to do it. We are happy to do it. From the get-go, as I said, the abortion pill has been promoted by a corrupted and politicized FDA, contrary to the health of both pregnant mothers and their unborn children. That the Biden-Harris FDA is covering up key facts about the approval of the abortion pill while simultaneously promoting its wide use is a scandal. So we filed Friends of Court briefs with the Supreme Court as they were considering challenges to the widespread use of this pill, the FDA, again, bypassing the rules to get it out. You know, you're not allowed to mail abortion pills, but Biden thinks he can. I mean, it's the rules of the law. The rule of law doesn't apply when it comes to killing the unborn for the left. It's fanaticism. And so our work in this case, in this area, I said, goes back decades. And it will continue as long as unborn children are being killed through chemical abortions with the support of our federal government. I'm proud of this work, and you should be too. So a lot going on. And I'm going to push the book again, Rights and Freedoms in Peril, coming out, there you go, coming out October 15th. Purchase it now. And it's a great book. You're going to want to read it. And by participating in, by getting the book, purchasing the book, you help promote it with others. The more people who purchase it, the more people will know about it. We want to get it on the bestseller list and get more attention to our work that way. I mean, do you think what Judicial Watch's work, do you think Judicial Watch's work is important, that other people get information about what we're doing? I'm sure you do. One way to do that is to get the word out about this book. So I encourage you to get it, Rights and Freedoms in Peril, an investigative report on the left's attack on America. Get it now at your favorite bookseller. I'll see you here next time on the Judicial Watch Weekly Update. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and like our video down below.